Hi, I'm Ben Richardson, and you're listening to the Karate Podcast, where we talk about karate, the competitive sport of Kumite, and the warrior's journey. Brought to you in association with Kumite Coach, the world's first progressive online high-definition coaching platform, created by coaches and fighters for coaches, fighters, and students of karate. Join KumiteCoach.com today and take your karate to the next level. Okay, guys, welcome to another episode of the Karate Podcast. Really excited and privileged today to have with me Dean Lowe. Dean is a fourth degree black belt in Wei Chi Ru Karate. He has been training for 41 years and started his journey, as we'll find out, in the same club as the legendary Wayne Otto. He's one of the foremost coaches in the UK, having produced many national and international champions, and is currently the assistant England Kumite coach. So Dean, thanks very much for being on the podcast today. Sorry about the dog barking. great to have you with us.
Pleasure. Total pleasure, Mike.
So could you just give us a quick rundown on how you found karate, and maybe some of the reasons you decided to stick with it, and that sort of led you onto this path?
Yeah, it was actually my mum, bless her. She, my whole family box, I'm from East London originally, and on my housing estate, everyone boxed, all my family, my boxing, like the local club, my uncles were trainers, my cousins all boxed, it was all, and I went once with my dad, and my dad was like, come on. And at the door, I was crying. I just didn't want to do it. I was like long blonde hair, believe it or not. And right, just this little pretty face thing. I can't even believe it's me when I was terrified. And I ended up walking home because my dad was disappointed. I didn't want to go in this boxing club. And then my mum went, I'll get him into martial arts. He won't get his face damaged. You know, boy, like that. It was like learning to get do something he can study and do it properly. And she walked through the housing estate where we lived. And there was a sign in a hall window saying karate. And that was it. That was the start of it. Terry Daly's club it was in Bow in East London. I was 1980.
So how is that coming from a boxing family to being the first person to now be a karateka? Did that have any ramifications in the family?
Because they're very old school. I had a lot of stick, you know. Yeah. And it's funny now because I think back at like the times when my dad and his brothers would get their sons fighting in the lounge with gloves on.
Yeah.
Me with a wide stance trying to do karate and them levering me with these big pads, you know. And it's like they used to, I've got some stick for it over the years. But now they're all like totally blown away by it, you know, especially with the England thing and all that. And it's, yeah. But I stuck. There was a time I come away from it being a teenager. I was about 15, 16, and I've come away from it for about 4 or 5 years,
right?
And that's where my life living in London took a different turn. So then I come back to it, which coincided with me sorting myself out. I just had a time where I just went off the rails, really, as a London kid, you know?
Yeah, that age.
Yeah, so, and I think even to now, I feel like I'm indebted to it. You know, I owe it so much. I can't emphasize that side of it is like, when I look at friends of mine, the paths they've taken, some of the things that have happened, you know, and I still thank karate now just for everything. You know, it's like, so, yeah, no. So I made the right choice for me at that time.
Amazing. That's really great to hear. And with your, so as you were growing up and obviously started karate, were there times when you looked at boxing and thought, and, you know, had thoughts around the differences or the effectiveness of it, or were you just always a believer that karate had the answers you were looking for?
I did end up going into boxing. Mm-hmm. I got into my teens and I got a little bit mentally a bit rougher, I think, because when I was young, I was quite intimidated very easy. But as I got a little bit I don't know, brave, a bit more sure of myself and all that. Then I went into it and I really enjoyed it. But I remember because of the route I took and then speaking to Terry Daly, who's been like a dad to me. There's not, you know, I can't emphasize how much that man has had an impact on me, you know. And I just went back into karate and it just happened. It didn't really, no one ever said to me, you've got to do this, don't do that. But I did environment, that calmer environment that we was training in. And it was a little bit more like a family. Then we started doing comps.
Yeah.
And because we're a traditional club, Terry's is a traditional club. When Terry started, although he'd done brilliantly with fighters, we turned up and none of us really had done competitions and Terry hadn't done many, you know, especially at like England level or anything like that.
Yeah.
So Wayne started to put them on the map. Terry put us on the map and we went round getting our butts kicked for a while, you know, and then Terry being the person he is, was like a sponge, just took it in, put it out to us. And then that all changed, spun on its head. So, we owe Terry a lot. I think Wayne would say exactly the same.
It's incredible. So was Terry also Wayne's sensei at the time?
Yeah. When I started karate, I was 9. And if I've got this right, I think Wayne must have been about 13. So we was all young in the club at the time. And Wei Chi Ru's not the most flamboyant and flash of styles. You know, katas are not like very pleasing on the eye. There's a lot of depth within them, a lot of fundamentals, you know.
Sure.
So for us, obviously, we're conditioning our shins and our forearm. That side of things is very, you know. But as a style of karate that people are going to go, wow, I want to be a part of this. It wasn't really like that. It's just that we got used to it as we was in there. Terry delivered it in a way that made us appreciate what it was we was learning.
Yeah.
And our interest built from that, really.
And so I guess being in a club, I mean, Wayne Otto is probably the greatest British karateka of all time in terms of what he achieved competitively. You know, that's might be arguable, but I think it's probably quite a truism. Being around him as a young karateka and then growing up with him in the same club, what was that like for you in terms of influence?
It hurt. I remember it's more recently. I remember Wayne saying that I was like the aggravating kid because I was the youngest one in the class at that time. He said, and I was the little lippy one, and they'd chase around the hall and like. But yeah, you know, it was a learning curve. You have, even when I deliver stuff now when I'm teaching, I think you can spot a future champion, a future achievement within it. You know, in regards to medals. Or like accolades in regards to England and stuff, because even as a black belt, Wayne Otto's basics were exceptional.
Yeah.
And everything he done was 120%. His mindset was ridiculous as well. That was just his whole attitude and focus to his karate was exceptional. So that was a learning curve. And it was no coincidence. I didn't win nothing of any substance, I suppose, when I was younger, because my mindset was totally different.
Yeah.
I was at, you know, I went away from karate at an important time, and Wayne had that focus to carry on, you know, and ability and hard work, no doubt, you know, but
yeah,
his attitude was always going to achieve. Even now, he's very focused and So I didn't achieve nothing like that. And that was down to us as individuals, really, that were totally different.
Yeah. And what age did you attain your black belt?
I was a brown belt for about 14 years, I think.
Wow. That's
so I was a brown
belt. Very close to the record, that.
Yeah. Funny, because my brown belt, I've still got it. It's fraying. You know, on the sides when it goes, yeah, my brown yeah. like that, you know. Nice. Like, so, yeah, but I never had a, Terry was the same. I never had this thing to get a belt, you know. We never, and they just happened, you know. Even to now with my club, I've got kids at my karate club. They've had the same belt for a year.
Yeah.
you know, so they're not really obsessed with it either. I think you can get into it and then you're up for to being disappointed then, you know, if that makes sense, you know. Yeah. So
yeah,
I'm away from grades.
And so as a brown belt, up to that point, what was it that was holding you in karate? Was it a self-defense aspect? Was it a fitness aspect? Was it the camaraderie? Was it the technical development side of things? What for you personally held you in the sport that long?
Well, like I said, when I was younger, it didn't hold me. But when I come back, what held me was the route I could have been taking. It was like a focus away. I've got quite an obsessive nature. I'm quite like addictive nature. That's it. Yes. So when I'm doing something, I'm doing it like full on.
Sure.
So when I come back into it, I'm sure I was about 20, 21 when I come back in. So it might have been about 5, 6 years I was out. It was my thing where I had to do it. It was like a bit like therapy.
Yeah.
You know, because I was a completely different person then. And even to now, I cringe, you know. But nothing where I've done anything to anyone innocent or anything like that, but just going into a bar and, like, a Barney was a part of
just
what we'd done. Yeah. Yeah, it was just that, you know. And that's, God, it's awful. I'd cringe now.
Yeah. And at what point did you start to coach? What point did that start to take shape in your martial arts career?
Look, Terry, it was funny because the thing fighting for England was nothing that really, although I went England training and stuff like that early on, it wasn't something that really grabbed me. But I remember saying to Terry at about 12, 13 years old, I'd like my own club. One day I want to have my own club.
Yeah.
And then to same sort of thing, with karate, I moved out of the area, out of East London to Essex when I was 24, 25, mm-hmm. for the reason of gets me away from a lot of stuff that I need to get away from, basically.
Sure.
I couldn't get into Terry's regular because I was 35 miles away. Saying that now, when the athletes travel 60 miles to go and train for the evening, but then, I just thought, I'm going to open my own club local. And I had a few friends go to me who were adults with me, like 24, 25. Why don't you open a karate club here? So there was us lot doing San Chin Kata, five of us, like all older in Benfleet first. And then a few more adults joined. And then when my son got to 5, 6 years old to do karate, I'd done a little class for him and a few of his mates, and then that grew. Yeah. So my club's been open now about 24 years.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So I was 25 when I opened it. So, yeah.
So over that time period, what are there any sort of major changes that you have implemented in terms of your coaching style, or what process do you now take your athletes through that maybe didn't exist when you first started out?
It's massively different. I think society is different. I think I've got more experienced and realised makes people tick. I have often now have my students say to me, "Oh, Dane, you've got so soft." When we was at you was, and I was like, yeah. Yeah, I think I've learned that, you know, some kids need a hug, some kids need a
kick up the back.
Yeah, there's kids are different, you know, and I think that's the bit of, and also I think early days, I wanted them to achieve, and if I'm totally honest, maybe I wanted them to achieve for me.
Yeah.
Where now they don't have to achieve for me. I do what I do. I think you can see it in some young instructors, or even some instructors anyway, they've got so obsessed with them putting their students, putting them on the map.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think, I think that was a bit of me just being inexperienced.
Yeah, I think often you see coaches living through their students, trying to, you know, achieve what they didn't or relive what they did. And it's often quite cringeworthy when you're on the sideline reading into that, particularly because it's often a negative thing. It's not often you see it.
No,
that's great.
And it's the same different, Ben, is it? You know, like when we'll all see it in parents.
Yes.
You know, and I've been, my son fought for England and he was good. He won championships and all that. So, and I was that early instructor. And there's a little bit of me nipped now. I'm totally honest. You'll get that from me. There's a bit now, I think, why he doesn't do karate now.
Yeah.
Because I was that pushy, excuse making. You know, if he had a bad day, I was like, yeah, he's battered a bad ankle. You know, just putting it down and the pressure I put on him. And I think as soon as you're on the mat, and I think what I've done as I've got older, the more I shout on the mat, if I have a little bit of a disagreement with a coach or a referee, I don't feel the pressure. The fighter feels the pressure.
Yeah.
And it just piles it all in on them. And a lot of time you're talking about youngsters, you know? So for me to ever go to a referee, I've already made my student's next fight even harder. Because the referee is human behavior. You think, and you go points the other way, but I've seen it. Do you know what I mean? And right, wrong or right, it's what happens. They don't want you around there for four rounds of competing.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I can completely empathize with the coaching side of things. My dad was very pushy on the football side of things. And I remember getting to 14 or 15 just saying, I'm not doing it anymore, you know. And it was funny because I think it was just before lockdown, you know, this is, what, 30 years later, we're driving through town and we stopped at the traffic lights. And my dad just turned to me and he said, son, really sorry about the football. And it was just out of the blue. Yeah. And I thought, what are you talking about, Dad?
And I think because we all learn, don't we? Do you know what I mean? Even us as dads, you know, I remember, like, I'm 51 now, but I remember, like, I've actually had a conversation with my son.
Mm.
You know? I've actually had a... Who was it? It might have been Natalie Williams.
Yeah.
I think... Because Natalie Williams coached a few of my students at the European Championships in Serbia, and that would have been 2011. And she was a part of the England coaching for youngsters, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember just saying, yeah, I think I was too pushy with Jack. That's why he doesn't do it now.
Yeah.
You know? But then on the other hand, my son don't agree with that. My son will say, no, you know? He said, but that, and he'll say, but I'm focused now for work. What he's like now, he's very successful with his job.
Yeah.
And he's a lot of it down to karate, having that focus, discipline, and a commitment to something.
Yeah, fantastic.
But I still ask myself questions, but I always do. You know, I always do.
So as a coach, you obviously, like you said, you have to play to different personalities, understand different motivations for athletes. But is there do you have a process that you would take an athlete through in helping them develop maybe towards, well, any competition, but possibly it's more focused at a higher level of competition?
I think I don't have numbers now. People who individually have different abilities, but I do have like a set where they'll do certain comps. And then when I think they're ready to do the bigger next level comp, they'll do that.
Yeah.
You know, so in the club, we have our belts, so they work to that. And then even within my club, I have a different class where I might go, right, if you want to start coming on the Thursday fight class, you're welcome to come to that now.
Sure.
Because they level. So that's within the club. And I suppose I do it without realising in regards to competitions as well. You know, I think the big thing is, what's really hard is, you might have people at your club that are of a certain level, like a decent level, for instance, doing the youth K1s. the level of them competitions is frightening when you look at the ability of these kids from all over Europe, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Well, and it's very easy to get sucked into the fact you've got someone that trains around the group that go to these competitions. The parent wants them to go.
Yeah.
They're at their depth. Yeah, they go.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more recently I've started to think, just to protect the kid, I think they don't want to do it. Sometimes you'll have parents that live through their kids, like we were just saying. Do you know?
Yeah.
They just
yeah.
more children, you know? And if they just eased off a little bit, the kids would more than likely enjoy their karate without the pressures. Because young kids, especially our kids are generally, you know, they're not as tough daily as some of the kids in the world, you know, and some of the pressure, you know, and even to the way the coaches address them. I've seen coaches like abroad, like rough their kids up before they go out to fight. Then you'd be pulled over the coals here, wouldn't you? Do you know what I mean? You just kind of, so the kids are different. And I think we should be a bit more aware of their mental health.
Yes.
You know, I think, and let them just enjoy it.
Yeah, that's important. In terms of your own club, I presume you're still a traditional club, are you, that teaches?
Yeah.
And so do you have a squad process? How do you encourage people towards competition, or do you just let that happen naturally in your club? And because I know from my own perspective that maintaining a squad has always been quite challenging. You get, you know, years where you've got loads of competitors, and the next year there's like five or six. You know, we've got a good process thing in place now to sort of develop it, but I think there's a sense of pressure almost for people who haven't competed. They build up this image of what competition might be like, and even before they've done it, they've decided they're not going to do it, you know, because of this preconceived notion they have. So what do you have at your club that propagates competition?
Because my club's not that big. So I know I hear of some clubs that have got 300 students, and they have a proper program they work to, which I can see why. But because my club's fairly small, it's conversation, you know, like at the end of the class, like the other day, I was just like, right, there's the Ipswich competition, and if anyone wants to do it, that's red belt and above, because it's a small competition.
Yeah.
You know, if some of them don't want to do it, I've got a few that I look at them and I think, you could be so good. And I really wanted to do it, but I just don't say nothing, you know? Yeah. And I think, well, sometimes in my club, because we have a successful group, that puts pressure on the younger ones.
Yeah, because they're naturally
winning.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'll just take away the importance of it early days. And if they fancy doing it, because the slam man, I've never really, the slam man with a punch bag, you know, the kids get up and it's always, I've always been a bit old school, from, really? And more recently, I've started to appreciate it a lot more. So that's me learning again, you know, and the way it gives the kids an opportunity to compete without the worry of getting hurt.
Yeah.
And like the environment.
Yes.
So a few people that done that first, they've actually said, oh, I really want to compete now.
Yeah.
So I do, it is very good. Yeah.
Yeah, I think exposure to that, it's like most fears are built on the unknown, aren't they? So once you kind of understand it, it's easier then to make decisions based on it. So what are some of your, I know we've just said we're not living through our students, but at the same time, what are some of the achievements as a coach you've helped create that you're most proud of?
Do you know what, Ben? And it really is. I've got two students at my club that have fought for England.
Yeah.
One of them at the Europeans as a, I think it was 17, 16. And there's been someone that was at mine, they're not with me no more, but we still, you know, I still talk to them and they're still all right. And they won an Olympic youth medal.
Amazing.
But my biggest achievement is watching my students that are in their 20s, still around karate, doing well in their jobs.
Yeah.
And I have people come up to me and going, they're a good lad and they're a good girl. You're lucky to have them with you. That makes me more proud than if one of them would have said European champion.
Ooh.
And it really is. It's totally, that's exactly how I see it. It's like I was at the Central England recently.
Yeah.
And I had four people with me there. Students, one of them's recently joined me, you know, last year. And the way they was with the kids, they were coaching. And I just felt in awe of them.
Yeah.
And that's the bit, you know, they could have won anything and it wouldn't have mattered as much as, so the bigger picture of then turning into a decent human being as they've got older is more important than any medal.
Fantastic.
You know, we've got English, British championships, European medal. I've never had a student with a world medal yet, though, so I'm a little bit, that's a bit annoying.
If I want it. Time.
And we've had a lot come through the club, like, that have gone and fought for England, an awful lot. But yeah, I do think the decent human being thing is, and that's not me just saying it, it's the bit that makes me the proudest out of it.
Yeah, that's great. It's really great. Getting back to your coaching career, you're now the assistant Kumite coach for England. So tell us a little bit about your coaching journey into the EKF ranks.
Well, my club started doing really well. I did have many years of Wei Chi Ru students doing really well and people coming up to me and tapping me on the Terry laugh still now and going to me, Dean, Terry Daly, he's doing so well with you. Team Wei doing so well. It's Terry Daly, something else. And I remember thinking, they're mine. They're with me. So more recently, like, obviously we took up the posts pre-COVID.
Yeah.
We didn't have many. We had a few sessions and a trip. But prior to that, what happened was people that I've got a lot of time for, respect for within karate saying to me, Dan, you've got to put yourself forward for this. Why are you not a part of a regional coach or something like that? And the reason why, I had this thing that a regional coach, I thought it should always be a development process.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when I was offered it a few times, I said, so what does the regional process do? Not, it's different now. I said, what's your responsibility? What do you have to teach and put over, you know? Oh, no, you just do what you like. And I was like, has that a progress to the A squad?
Yeah.
I said, the head coaches tell you what you got to do or what he wants from people growing up and moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh,
no. And because I thought, I don't get that. I really didn't get it. So I never went for it, you know?
Yeah.
And I had people like Wayne, Terry, a few people saying to me when the assistant coaches posts come out, why are you not doing it? I don't understand it. And I think there was a confidence within me that wasn't that great in regards to I've not won a world title. I've always had this thing, you know, all the England coaches have been brilliant coaches. Willie Thomas, Paul Newby, Wayne Otto, Tiki Donovan. Yeah?
Yeah.
And then there's me, that's not one nothing. All right, I've got a successful club and I've produced fighters, but, and then people going, no, it's bigger than that. So I went and applied for it. And I really wanted the opportunity to work with Junior Laverve.
Yeah.
Because I know how good and how rated throughout the world he is. So that was another learning curve for me.
Yeah.
So I pull it and I end up getting it.
Fantastic.
It's been really good with me, Satinder, now Jury.
Yeah.
He's the coach as well, and he's brilliant. We bring different stuff to the table. We still clashed, me and Sack clashed at the weekend with our fighters on the mat. Really clashed. We didn't actually clash, but I know people come up to Sat and went, you had a falling out with Dean, you know, so our fire's still there for our, we'd have our students back, you know, it's like,
sure.
But we are a close team. The England group of coaches is very close.
That's great.
We've got a lot of trust in each other.
Yeah.
I think the squad have done well in recent years, more than they have done for a long time. You know?
No, they're looking great, actually. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, so, and they're very young. I think that's another thing that people forget. They're very young.
Yeah.
You know, we had good fighters before, but like a lot of them were up against it. I didn't have, you know, Carla Burkett, for instance. Some of the stuff they, you know, she's with me now at my club. And we've had some brilliant athletes. Alton Brown, Natalie Williams, Carla, Amelia, Joe Kellaway, you know, all these people that have just missed out. And you, I think it's been because of outside rather than inside.
Yeah.
You know, funding, money, you know, it's really hard, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But if we can keep them in karate, that's important. And Jordan Thomas. I've got Jordan Thomas, the world champion, you know. Yeah, so, yeah, I don't think we're too far behind in regards to the athletes. Mm-hmm. I think we're quite a way off in regards to the support network around them.
Yes, I get that feeling after interviewing lots of people and on the podcast that is one of the things that's holding us back as a nation.
Yeah. And we just try and, what with me, Sat Junior and all that, is we try and support as much as we can.
Yes.
We try to say to them, look, come tell us. This ain't you're not happy about or you want to try and do something different, we try and help you with it. We want them to approach us, you know. And they've been, the feedback more recently from the elite athletes now has been very positive. They feel a part of the team, you know, all this stuff. Not because before, I don't even know what it was like before, but we're just trying to create that now as a group. Plus, there's more of us. You've got Junior as head coach, then he's got three assistant coaches. And then we've got a really supportive network of regional coaches that attend the national training.
That's good.
Yeah, so there is a bigger group of people where before it was two coaches, and I'm not sure what the involvement was with national training with the regions. So we all tend to keep it close. And if I'm fed up with Zoom meetings, all I have is Zoom meetings. No, not today. You're right today, but it's hilarious. You know, even on the group, they just went, Dean, we're going to have a Zoom meeting. We're sorry, because I'm like, I'm not another Zoom coaches meeting. But so we're in contact with each other a lot. So.
Yeah, fantastic. And what's it been like being with Junior and learning his way of things?
His passion. I remember because a few people said, yeah, you know, he's from Belgium and the England coach, you know, and all this. A bit like football, isn't it? It's been in the
world. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But he's such a professional. He's coached an England fighter against his own student fighting for Belgium and beat his student, you know?
Yeah.
And he is so professional and he is so dedicated to it. Because someone said, oh, he's quite fiery or he's very outspoken. Yeah, he is, but he's very, he does it in the right way. Mm-hmm. He's not, you know, so he's very setting what he wants, how he wants to do it, and his knowledge is exceptional. For Japan to get Junior over to teach Kumite to their athletes says it all.
Yeah.
You know, so, but to work with, it's very, for me, we're learning all the time, me, Sat, Yuri. You know, it's, it's very good to work with.
Yeah, and I presume because the regional coaches are there now as well, there's that filtering system where each level is taking on some aspect of what the national team is working towards.
Yeah, he has a big thing, Junior, on aggression. People expressing themselves and being dictating the fight and not bouncing around for the whole 2 minutes, being a little bit more.
Yeah.
And that's being fed through to us by the people that come down to us that get, like, so the region will select athletes they want to put forward for national training, for assessment. That's how it recently was. And we're noticing it when they come to us, they're ready.
Yeah.
and they've got a little bit of menace in them, if that makes sense, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what, from a coach's perspective, what would you ideally like to see changing to, you know, increase our athletes' success at the international level? What things could be added to the current setup? What, if you had a magic wand, you could wave it, what would you see occur or add to the current setup?
Funded, definitely. I think our students need to be fighting abroad.
Yeah.
And that's not cheap, you know? We have set up a new system now where you don't have a selection day. You know, like, say, for instance, me and you are the top fighters in our weight category.
Sure.
Election day, me and you fight each other and the winner goes.
Yeah.
It's not done like that now. We would have to generate points at named competitions. So we might get so many points for a bronze, you might get more points for your silver.
Yeah.
And then the next comp that's on the list, we have to, and then it's taken from the highest point. Now, sure. Some of them are competitions abroad. You know, so, but it's not cheap. But then no elite sport is cheap. But the problem with us, we're not funded. It's, you know, so it's always on the parents. Or so I think funding, even to the point of getting squad lists out earlier, so the bookings get done earlier, so they're cheaper. When, you know, because I know my son fought for England, Malaysia 2011, and I remember our bill was £1,600.
Wow.
But it has changed because I remember them paying £5 for an England badge.
Yeah.
You know, so they don't do that now. And they get it. Yeah, so, yeah, and I had to buy the tracksuit, the hoodies, the polo shirt because I have to wear all the stuff. And we had to buy that. Then I had to get a flight to go there to watch, you know. So it's not that bad now because they do try and do something. They don't pay for none of the tracksuits. They don't, rightly so. Yeah. You find. Yeah, we make it sound like that's amazing, but that's the least we could be doing at the minute. I know there is some funding for certain athletes with a capability to win medals, you know, like the higher ranked fighters, they get a bit of funding support, but I don't get involved in that side of it. I don't even know how much some of them got, so, but yeah, it's, the funding is massive, I think, massive. Yeah.
And what are some of the goals that you have for your coaching over the next year?
In regards to club?
Yeah.
Continue how we are, really. Continue how we are. My group do me proud all the time. You know, just continue how we are. Sometimes you'll have good days, bad days. I try not to big up the events, and I try not to... You know, so someone gets a British gold, brilliant, well done. That's it. And then when they get beat in the first or second round, never mind, we move on. Mm-hmm. So I try not to over celebrate, and I try not to get too disappointed. So keep that going the same. I'd like to get students from my club to medal for England.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I had Vadim, but not for a while now. And also for England, as an England coach, to continue what we're doing and keep adding to what we're doing.
Yeah.
Now, at the Junior Europeans, we got 4 medals. Recently, at the Junior Worlds, we got 1.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Now, because the coaches have a little discussion beforehand, and I was like, 3 medals. They laughed at me at the Europeans. Not laughed at me, but when I said 4, they was like, wow. Yeah, I went, yeah, 4. We got 4. And for the Worlds, I put 3, but we got one. But it was, I'm saying that like it's not nothing. But yeah, to keep adding, keep improving, moving forward. You know, it's not going to happen overnight, but we have got some talent here. We've got talented coaches in England. You know, we've got a load that come from Paul's club, lads that are on the squad, and they're brilliant to work with. You can pick students. And more or less pick their coaches. You know who their coaches are just because of the way they are. Paul's students are tough. They're like very good, but they're tough lads. And that's always work with, you know. It's like, but yeah, to move forward with them really and give them their best opportunity.
Yes. Yeah, it'd be fantastic to see that.
Yeah.
Dean, thanks so much for being on the podcast. I've really enjoyed meeting you and talking to you. And, you know, it's great to hear the positive things that are coming out of the England camp as well. And I wish you every success with both that and your club for the future.
Thanks, Ben. Loved it. Enjoyed it. It's good. It's brilliant what you're doing as well. It's because me and Sat, like, we log on and we're like, who's he got this? You know, we're watching.
It's good.
Yeah, well, and we phone them after, and we go, "Who's you staying now?" You know. Oh no, it's all good. Really good.
Good to hear, mate. Thank you. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Oh,